My guests are cookbook authors John and Marina Bear. Lots of cookbooks tell you how to cook, but the Bears have written a book that tells you what to do after you've ruined the recipe. It's a humorous but practical manual called How to Repair Food. The book is organized alphabetically, beginning with advice on how to save tough abalone, make a seafood chowder, and ending with tips on what to do with overcooked and soggy zucchini. They suggest pureed zucchini cream soup. They've also included appendices with additional information on kitchen disasters ranging from remedies for burned food to how to cook an emergency first aid dinner after you've ruined the real meal. John and Marina Bear dedicated their book to their mothers. I asked them why.
The dedication is to our mothers who, in effect, made it possible and necessary. we are both only children born to older mothers who were, we may say they understood this, terrible cooks.
So that when we started cooking ourselves and together, the idea of trying all these wonderful exotic things that we had heard about but had never eaten, what it produced was that terrible moment in the kitchen when you think you have followed the recipe exactly right, and there's something awful that's happening in the stove. It's gone flat, or it's probably sticking to the bottom, or it smells funny.
Also, we are cookbook junkies, as many people are. We buy lots of them. We enjoy reading them just for pleasure. And it is extremely rare for any cookbook to acknowledge that they are less than perfect, that if you follow the directions exactly, that things will look just as beautiful as those glossy color photographs in the book. And we all know that simply is not the case, whether sometimes cookbooks make mistakes, whether it's the humidity in the air or the atmospheric pressure or the tomatoes that are juicier than the one that the cookbook author did. Things absolutely go wrong, and cookbooks don't acknowledge this. So here was a real niche in the world of writing about food, a niche to be filled.
The way I understand it, you spent a really long time intentionally cooking up disasters so that you could figure out how to repair them.
Which led to one of the absolute finest hints in the book, which is boiling cloves in either sugar water or vinegar on your stove to cover up very funny smells, which you have created because you were burning the things which you then figured out how to repair.
Right. When you make the smells better in the house, things generally don't seem nearly as bad. This is a tip that is worth several hundred thousand dollars, by the way, because when we were selling a house that was very hard to sell, when we made this wonderful smell in the house, as people came to look at it, it gave people apparently this nice, warm, homey, folksy feeling, and the house sold very promptly.
What were some of the dishes you intentionally made into disasters?
Flat soufflés. A flat chocolate soufflé is wonderful. But there's another one. You've got to simply cover it up and rename it.
Into what, chocolate bar?
I've always liked death by chocolate.
Death by chocolate, right.
Yeah, if you put enough chocolate on it, almost anything, people will forgive and even not notice what's underneath.
But if you do it with a savory souffle, then you have, you call it a frittata instead of a souffle, and you never tell them what it was supposed to have been, and they're amazed. How do you get your frittata puffy on the edges like this, and you smile enigmatically?
I think one of the absolute classic ones, and also one of the great sort of the holy grail in this food repair world, is oversalting. When something is too salty, what do you do about it besides throw it out? So we spent a lot of time oversalting things and then going into the chemistry lab of the kitchen trying to figure out what to do.
What'd you come up with?
Oh, the only thing that absolutely works without fail every single time is adding more stuff that isn't salted. If your soup is too salty, you put more liquid in. Of course, this doesn't always work. The potato thing is intriguing.
Yes. Slicing raw potato, floating on it on the top. This is assuming you've got enough liquid. The potato absorbs somehow, magically, absorbs some of the salt in the sauce of whatever it's there. You then either have a choice of removing all the potatoes or, if you combine them back in, you get some of the salt back in, but then you've made more stuff, and maybe that helps too.
As in most of the stuff we talk about, there is no absolute one perfect way to do it. It's kind of the philosophy of the whole thing, that it's, before you throw it out, at least stop and pause and think, is there something I can do? And
a little pinch of brown sugar sometimes seems to be counteracting the saltiness, especially if it's in a sauce that has tomatoes. These are the kind of hints in the book.
You suggest keeping a first aid kit of food around for emergency rescues and emergency dinners that have to be made. And you have some surprising ingredients in your first aid kit. One of them is a box of mashed potato flakes. Why do you think people should have that around?
It's a thickener, and it's food. It can be instantly dropped into certain kinds of soups and gravies. You get a sense of this when you've been doing it for a while. If you can dump mashed potato flakes into the stew when it looks more like a soup with lumps, you're adding some nourishment, and you're also thickening it up a little bit.
You also recommend having a can of either cheese sauce or cheese soup on your first aid kit shelf. What would you do with that?
Cover things that it might be compatible with that taste fine but look funny. Or
that's one of the great sort of meta tips or generic tips is cosmetic attention to things. If something goes terribly wrong, covering it up, the literal meaning of cover up is really a very practical sort of thing to do. So a nice thick cheesy sauce is absolutely fine, or a dessert sauce or whatever.
There are times when you will cook something and it will stick on the bottom, a vegetable perhaps. By the time you've taken it carefully off, you've left a layer of burned vegetable stuck on the bottom of the pot, and now there's not enough. And many vegetables can be rescued by putting a layer of cheese on the top. If you have time to run it under the broiler or shake a little paprika on it, fine. If not, the sauce looks as if you cared, and it probably will cover your kitchen disaster.
You could even add the cheese soup to the mashed potatoes and make a
disaster, which you then had to correct.
No, naming dishes is very important, too. If you tell people, this is my grandmother's famous mashed potato cheese flambé. Yes. Right, put a little sherry on it and set fire to it, and people will think you probably meant to do it.
You both have a real gift for language and for naming foods, and I know that you have an entire dinner menu comprised only of ingredients on your first aid food shelf. So you have a dessert that's called poached fruit with vanilla sauce. Oh, that sounds really good, doesn't it? Why don't you tell us what the recipe really includes in that lovely named dessert?
You have fruit that you've drained it.
You've drained it. Wait a minute.
You've got canned fruit.
We have canned fruit. Let me just candidly spell out what poached fruit with vanilla sauce is.
Okay.
It's some canned pears with vanilla pudding on top.
That's
basically
what it is.
You also have a whipped topping made out of chilled evaporated milk.
Mm. sounds great.
It is truly not bad. And when you imagine the psychology of the situation where, there you are and your cake has absolutely burned in the oven because you've forgotten about it, and the boss or somebody important is there at dinner and you want a dessert.
I have a feeling when you were at the height of your research, you spent a lot of time eating out after your disasters were finished.
It was refreshing from time to time, but that is truly the last resort, because we really tried to maintain this policy of don't give up, that there is something to be found in everything, which it didn't always work out. When you have absolutely charred the steak till where it's charcoal, then you can use it for sketching pictures, but it is hardly, there is really no way whatsoever of turning that kind of thing back into usable food.
Now that your secret is out that you burn a lot of food, but you know how to save it, are fewer people willing to come over and risk dinner at your place?
Our children are eager to do it. There was a long period when I think going to mom and dad was a very strange experience, something that they could tell their friends about, but it was not exactly to be looked forward to. No, I think our reputation is sound enough that people come willingly, and of course they are more inclined to ask questions if something does arrive with a sauce on it.
The question is, did you intend to do it this way?
What was this before? Before the disaster? And was it an intentional disaster? Are you working on a sequel already?
Well, thanks a lot to you both for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
John and Marina Bear are the authors of How to Repair Food, published by 10 Speed Press.